You're listening to Campfire Conversations, brought to you by Three Rivers Land Trust. Connected to the land, committed to conservation.
May not know this, but every episode Sam and I come in 3 hours early and sit down, and first thing we say to each other is, let's make this the best episode yet. Let's do everything we can to better ourselves on this episode. And we do everything we can to make it better.
I was here at 5:45 this morning.
Beat me here a little bit. Beat me here.
I'm researching.
Getting ready for the day.
Yeah.
Getting ready for the podcast. The hardest we work all week long is getting ready for this. So, without further ado, we're going to get into it, and let's make it the best day possible.
Okay. That's a very positive attitude this morning, on a Monday morning.
I told Mikey when we were walking up the steps early, bright and squirrely this morning, looked at Mikey and I said, have yourself a great day today.
Wow.
And she looked at me and said, sure.
She said, shut up.
Yeah. It's Monday.
No, she didn't.
She was like, you have a good day, too.
Today is Monday, June 7th.
Is that right? Yeah, it is the 7th. You're right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's get into it. So, I've got a puppy. I guess we'll do puppy update.
You're a puppy daddy.
And yeah, puppy daddy. Dog dad.
Your dog dad. Gonna get one of those decals for your car?
Hashtag dog dad.
Hashtag dog dad. Hashtag I love my lab.
No, probably not.
You're a lab man.
I am.
Mm-hmm. A yellow lab man.
Yeah. So I got one of Althea, who belongs to Grayson Geyer, the owner and operator of...
This is probably a better question for Grayson, but what's the story behind the name Althea? Do you know this?
Oh, goodness. I can't remember off the top of my head. I
imagine there's a story. It's not a super common name. Okay.
I can't remember, but that's his... That's his lab, who we've talked about before, who's really, she's amazing. Waterfowl dog, upland dog, does it all. And I was fortunate enough to get one of her puppies, who I named Sally. And she is home with...
Sally. Yeah. She's my pally.
She is my pally.
She's a cute little ball of fur, that's for sure.
She is 8 weeks and 3 days old today. And we've had her for about a week. And she is doing great. I guess things to... Yeah, I was talking about Grayson. Grayson's the owner and operator of Lost Highway Gun Dog Kennels out of Winston-Salem. And he's a sponsor and friend of Cody and I's, for sure. Yeah. Good friend, and then also just a good friend of the Land Trust. And
he's not just a bird dog guy. He's a dog guy.
Yeah, oh yeah.
But specializes in training trainers, training dogs, bird dogs, and all kinds.
Yeah, I went and saw him this weekend. This is why you work with Grayson if you're trying to get a dog and want a quality pup.
Not necessarily from him, but
if you just
need some guidance and then help after you get the pup.
Yeah, because he sent me a text yesterday or Saturday night, and it was like, hey man, just finished up this book. I think it'd be a really good resource for you. I'd never read any of it's by Mike Gould. He's like, never read any of his stuff before, but I like his procedure, his methodology, and I have a copy for you. Got you a copy. Come on, swing on by. So I swung over there. He just handed me a copy. It had, you know, like, you can tell he'd been reading it. It had ear, you know, what do you call it? Tags.
Dog ears?
Dog ear. Thank you. Well, of course. Wow.
Whoa.
Yeah. Had dog ears.
We make it the best we can be.
Yeah, the best that we can be. This is my best on a Monday. It had dog ears all in it where he'd been reading it, and I've already started on that. But that's that's what he does. He's training the trainer. He wants the best for you. And I was telling him when I was sitting over there at his house, I was like, I think there's, you know, for a new time trainer, there's this, you kind of want like a recipe. You know, you kind of want like a, what do I do next? What's the next step? I'm so new to all this that it's not like when I'm developing a methodology, I'm coming from like this long background of experience that I have. And for
this
new,
is this the first dog you've raised from a pup?
Yes.
So it's this is your first real dog.
This is my first dog. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's awesome.
So it's,
I want to say, I remember my first dog, but yeah. It's not nice.
I mean, I had a,
I don't mean it derogatory. It's just a funny thing to say.
Yeah. It's, you know, we had a lab named Georgia.
Yeah.
Who I got, I was playing volleyball in PE class. Can't remember what grade I was in, probably in early middle school.
You're playing volleyball?
In PE, yeah.
I like some volleyball.
It was indoors, and there was a guy who went to school with me named Hal, and he was like jacked. And we both dove for ball. Thank you. I love this song.
Oh, that's what I was playing while you're talking this about Georgia. Yeah.
So me and Hal collided faces, and I fractured my orbital bone, my, like, socket. My
orbital process was fractured?
Yes. Oh, yeah. And I had a huge black eye. This is really nice. Nice song in the background of me talking about a fractured face.
We're the best we can be on Monday.
So the day after, we picked up Georgia. But that was like a family dog. It was like, you know, it was like a sweet present for me. It happened to line up with me fracturing my face.
Yeah.
But that was like a family dog, and I raised it with my parents. They did all the, you know, work for the most part along with me. But this is my first of my own. So Sally's great. She's really nice pup. But anyways, that book that I got from Grayson is called The Labrador Shooting Dog by Mike Gould, and it's just kind of one of the many resources that I've gotten from Grayson.
Is that book teaching your dog how to shoot?
I just sit. Yeah, I retrieve for Sally.
I like that.
But yeah, I've been reading all of it. If you just want to get a feel for Grayson and everything, just go to his website, read his blog
posts.
The
dude puts out, he puts out stuff all the time. He's got his own podcast,
yeah,
too.
Companion Gun Dog Podcast with Emily Shirey, who also she's been on the show. She's a great resource as well. Really, really. She's got a pup named Ember, lab puppy.
I almost named my dog Ember.
Her dog is like winning competitions as a trick dog right now at like 16 weeks old. Really. So she's a great resource as well. But we're loving Sally. Until I went to Grayson's house this weekend, she had not gone to the bathroom, had an accident of any kind in 10 days.
Indoors.
She took a tinkle on his deck when I was over there. She is... Things that we're doing, things that I've learned from you and learned from him. Crate training,
yeah,
is big. So she stays in the crate every night. I'm using clicker training. I see your daisy chain you're working on there.
Yeah, out of my headphone cord. Uh-huh,
yeah,
yeah.
I'm
not bored or anything. I'm just fidgety.
I understand. It's Monday, and we're being the best that we can be.
Yeah. I'm listening to everything you're saying.
So yeah, clicker training with the dog. She can sit. She knows place. I'm teaching her place, which I think is a valuable tool that I learned from Grayson and Emily. And we're just having fun at this point. She's monitoring. She's working for the land trust.
She's on the payroll.
She's on the payroll.
Yeah, she came out on the payroll the other day while I was planting the dove field. She came out, and I got to visit with her.
So,
not skittish, super friendly. The tractor noise didn't bother her at all, so that's a good sign.
Yeah. She's I think I'm going to be kind of take like 5 minutes, maybe every third episode or something, and just kind of give an update on where we're at. And maybe one day we'll get Grayson and Emily back in here. Yeah, I think so. Emily and Grayson back in here one day to talk. Because there's so much. It's so overwhelming. But it's fun. Gosh, it's fun. So if you're thinking about getting a dog, obviously you have so many resources at your disposal, but I would think about those two as just really wealth of knowledge that you can rely on. So
I just spent some time listening to another podcast about the and how it's affected the evolution of humans and how we've kind of went along side by side throughout history.
I mean, first domestication.
20,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
20,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first time they noticed humans and dogs being buried together.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that crazy? Egyptians were doing it. And it's throughout history, there have been dogs with man. And for one purpose, not to keep your lap warm, but for hunting.
Yeah, and companionship.
I mean, it all comes together, but nobody domesticated a wolf saying, I want this thing to be my buddy.
Mm-hmm.
They were like, this thing's good at hunting. He can do things that I can't do. And so I need him.
Mm-hmm.
And so they fed him. And throughout history, feeding and the survivability of those dogs, those wolves that were more likely to be okay with humans and interact with humans and not be aggressive, those traits were selected for just through not selective breeding, because that wasn't a thing yet, but it was through survivability. Those humans helped those wolves survive by feeding them, making sure they were healthy. And over time, they became the domestic dog that we know today, mm-hmm. with bigger eyes. Like they were getting way into it, talking about, you know, domestic dogs now have bigger eyes and more human-like faces compared to, you know, a wolf. And maybe now it's specifically bred for, but then it was just one of those things that just kind of all went along with that. And the bigger eyes thing is so you can read facial expressions.
Mm.
They can read human facial expressions. We've got big eyes, and we can read their facial expressions.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Before we get into garden talk update, did you know that there's a new season of Alone?
Dude, I'm watching it. I'm on it. I'm not missing it. I don't miss
it. This is our...
I'm so jealous.
Favorite TV show of our podcast, for sure.
It's a favorite. It is.
What do you think about the wildlife biologist?
Oh, I like him. From Idaho?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's got I knew
from
him.
From Florida, I guess, originally, right?
Yeah, but he's in Idaho now. I think it's Idaho is where he works. Yeah, he's from Florida. Or maybe he lives in Florida. But he was a biologist for Idaho for mm-hmm. a while, I think. But anyways, his name's Clay... starts with an H. Clay something. But anyways, he's got a YouTube channel
mm-hmm.
That I had watched. I'd been watching for a long time before I found out he was on the show. And so when it showed the cast of the new season and he was on there, I was stoked to see. Because this guy is legit.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a legit outdoorsman.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you can tell from episode one.
I mean, he's legit. He built, he builds self-bows, which is a project that I'm currently embarking on as well.
Yeah.
But he builds self-bows, which is a form of longbow, and it's all one piece instead of, a handle and two limbs. It's one piece carved bow. And the bow he's using on the show is one he made.
Oh, really?
Himself. Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. Super cool. Like, you should dig into that guy. But he's definitely a contender, in my opinion.
I don't want to spoil for people that may watch, but...
Well, there's nothing to spoil.
There's one person who's left.
Already... Oh, you mean already... He's already called out.
As soon as he was on camera, were you like, uh-oh?
No, but I feel like... So to give you the premise of the show Alone, if you haven't watched it, they drop a group of people separately on a vast tract of wilderness near a lake. In wintertime or fall, approaching mm-hmm. wintertime. And these people can't come into contact with each other. They can't leave this certain area.
What's this one called? Grizzly
something.
Grizzly Island. It's something like that, yeah.
But anyways, it's super cold. You know, you're in the wilderness and you get 10 items. We should talk about the 10 items. That'll go right along with some of my topic.
I think we have talked about it before.
But now we can really get into it because I've got the list.
Yeah, sure.
They got 10 items they can bring, plus clothes and some other things, but nothing, really no conveniences whatsoever. And they have to survive X amount of days, at least 70 days. And then the last man standing wins. You've got a satellite phone, you're filming yourself, and the show is just raw for the most part. And that's why we like it. But they haven't introduced, so it's only episode one is the only episode out right now. They haven't introduced the full cast yet, but of the full cast that they've shown so far, I'm liking Clay's odds.
Yeah.
But the guy who called out, like...
Tapped out.
Yeah, he tapped out first week, 6 days in or something. I already had reservations about him because he was so worried about bears. And everyone who's, like, concerned about bears, I don't have a lot of hope.
Is apparently... It's in British Columbia, I believe. Yeah. Highest density of grizzlies and mountain lions?
Maybe.
High density of mountain lions.
Got them. I mean, Clay saw one first day or two.
First day.
Yeah, almost first got day. Him.
One thing that I liked about Clay was there's a lot of people in the show that would see the mountain lion, and it would be definitely a mental F, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think we know what you're saying.
And he, like...
He's like, let me see if I can tree this.
I'm going to try to tree it. He, like, makes a dash to it. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah, it's a hunter for you. Mm-hmm. Like, that's... Like, he was thinking of it as food.
Yeah.
Which is... They're delicious. So, it's a good idea. But he made a bad move by not... So, one thing... If you learn one thing from this show, never travel without your weapon of... Whatever weapon you've got. Like, if you...
Don't even not travel. Like, by your side. Because he was in camp. Like, it was nearby.
But it was far enough away that he had to leave, go get it, sneak back. And at that point, he was all screwed up. So... You need to have that thing within arm's reach at all times.
So the 10 items that you're allowed to bring.
You can pick from a list.
You can pick from a list, but like a firearm is not permitted.
Yeah. Modern weapons are not permitted. Mm-hmm. I'll pull up the list while we're talking. But
compound bows are not permitted.
Yeah.
Go ahead and pull it up. Okay. But anyways, yeah, we've had this discussion many times about what items.
So you're allowed to bring. Or you are, well, you get to pick, but this is what you're allowed to. Everybody has this.
I think tarp is included.
No.
It is not?
No.
And no, yes, one tarp is included, but an extra tarp is one of your items, I believe.
I'm fixing to tell you what's included, and then we'll go through what's optional. One pair of high leg hunting boots, one pair of Arctic winter boots. These shows take place in the Arctic, basically. In the
top. This is not part of your 10, though. This is like.
This is things that everybody has.
Everybody
has. Not part of the 10.
Yes. Uh-huh.
One t-shirt. One fleece or wool shirt, two wool or fleece, cotton or cotton sweaters. It'd be weird to bring cotton. Six pairs of wool socks. I would go to Backcountry and Beyond before this trip and load up on socks, fit socks. Mikey was making some comments on my sock collection that I have expanded since being introduced. Like this weekend, we were doing some serious laundry. Like you was making some comments on my, she thought I was getting a little out of control with the fit socks. When you've got $400 worth of socks in your drawer, things are getting out of control. Okay, six pairs of wool socks, two hats. They can be brimmed, wool, fur, Arctic, or baseball. Two buffs or neck gaiter, but no baklavas.
Balaclava.
Balaclava. Balaclava.
Baklava is food.
Yeah. I've never really said that word out loud. Balaclava. I don't like that word. One shemagh, which is like the you see a lot of soldiers running them. Those are like neck wraps. They're like a scarf type thing. Popular in the Middle East. Four pairs of gloves, two pairs of underwear or briefs, one insulated parka style jacket, two pair of outdoor pants or bibs that can unzip into shorts. Which I don't know why you would want that, but one pair of fully insulated waterproof winter pants or bibs, one waterproof uninsulated shell jacket, two pairs of thermals, tops and bottoms, one pair of leg gaiters, one leather belt or synthetic equivalent. So I can
Big iron.
I can highly recommend the big iron because that thing's going to last you.
Who makes that?
That's Traveler Trading Company. So okay, nice. He should.
Would you take, if you were on the show, would you take your big iron?
You know, I actually have put some thought into this because a good leather belt you can use to sharpen a blade, like a leather strop.
Yeah.
But I would probably take the big iron just because it could double as multiple other things.
The durability of it.
Without breaking. Yeah. Like I wouldn't have to worry about it.
You're getting wet. Your leather belt just, yeah. I mean, yeah.
I just wouldn't have to worry.
Cracking.
It's going to come in handy. So, I would go with the big iron. I thought about this. You get to bring one toothbrush, one pair of eyeglasses, and one personal photograph. So,
They're pretty well equipped.
That's
in
the
terms
everybody.
Of, like, attire.
Clothing. Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Well, they don't want you to die.
Yeah.
So, here is when you... Here are the
things.
And
you may... For somebody who's never seen the show, you may be like, whoa. What's going on here? Like, that's a... Okay. Last season, it was -50.
Yeah, it's intense cold.
Yeah.
It's the Arctic Circle.
Mm-hmm.
So
this one isn't the Arctic Circle, but
no,
it's close.
But the last one was.
Yes, it was.
Mm-hmm. So, anyways, but this one's close enough. I mean, BC is
close enough.
So this next list, you can pick 10 items total, and so try to keep track. You got something to write with. Try to keep track of what you're gonna.
Yeah.
What you're
okay. Gonna pick. Yeah. Gotcha.
You have to source your own 10 items, so the show's not giving them to you. Mm-hmm. I think they will provide some of these other items.
Yeah.
And no duplicates, so you can't take two of something.
Okay.
So, and as we're going, so this is a topic. So everything's broken into areas.
Yeah, sure.
So shelter. Here's what you're allowed to bring. Either a 12x12 ground cloth / tarp, which almost everybody on the show brings that. But they always bring, like, I noticed these people bringing junky tarps, like Harbor Freight linoleum tarps. And I'm thinking, why would you not go canvas? If you're allowed any material, why not go with like a heavy-duty canvas tarp?
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay. Or 8mm climbing rope, 550 paracord, 80 meters of it.
Insignificant.
Or 3mm cotton cord, 40 meters. Can't be waxed. That's under the shelter category. So of that, I'm thinking you're going to need the ground cloth or tarp.
Got to have it, yeah.
And paracord, for me, is one of the things that I'm putting in my option list, okay? And the reason being is you can unthread that and have much more cordage if you need it. Bedding, one multi-seasonal sleeping bag, one bivy bag, one sleeping pad, or one hammock. Definitely going with the bivy bag, the mummy bag.
Yeah.
That's what I would take.
Yeah.
Sam would want to add pillow in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, but it's not an option. So you're going to have to kill yourself a goose.
Yeah. Well, that's fine.
Okay.
I'll make it work.
Cooking. Here's your options. You can take, and this is, so you need to think about this. And you can pick multiple items from this list, but you can't pick two of the same. So this is a list where you require some thought. Cooking, one large pot, or one steel frying pan, or one flint or ferro rod set with a standard size striker. That's the only type of fire starting equipment they're allowed to bring, by the way. Which is, and I talked about this before, I spent the whole year last year using a ferro rod to start all my fires other than our prescribed burns. Everything. Trying to get good at it. I'm okay at it, but it's still like not. Like under the best conditions indoors, in your fireplace, it's still kind of a pain.
Every single season, there's somebody
that doesn't bring one.
And like,
get it going.
I think every single season, not every single season, but like that always seems to bite them.
I always say that's a bad call.
There's one guy this season.
Oh yeah, he was thinking it was a bad. He was saying, I might should have not done this.
Did good though.
Oh, he got it. He used a bow drill and he got a fire going, but I still think it's a bad call.
We'll see.
I've got little confidence in that player.
Yeah.
In this
ferro rod.
So, ferro rod.
That's 100% for you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's coming. One enamel bowl for eating or whatever. One spoon, one canteen / water bottle. So, out of that list, I'm taking a ferro rod and I'm taking the large pot. Okay. And it doesn't specify how large of a pot. So I'm thinking like shrimp bowl size pot here.
Why not? Yeah. I want heavy duty.
You have
though.
To be able to carry everything.
Yeah.
So, but strap it on the outside of your backpack. You're not going far.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine. Hygiene. So this is where I would like not be so worried about this list of items to bring.
Yeah, I'm interested.
I would get
I'm
back into some of this other stuff. Bar soap.
No.
No way. Stupid. 8-ounce tube of toothpaste. I could see that. Those mornings when you wake up and it's like, you know.
One of your 10?
But I wouldn't do it.
One of your 10?
But I could see.
Charcoal, dude. Just use some charcoal.
I could see that. Just chew on some mint. Like, there's mint growing. I mean, there's mint growing out there. Or berries, whatever. One face flannel, which I'm not sure I know what a face flannel is. I'm assuming it's like a towel. One 40mm roll of dental floss. Could be useful. I wouldn't bring it. But could be useful because they get a first aid kit. I didn't say that, but they do get a first aid kit.
Yeah, pretty good one too.
Yeah. So dental floss, you're gonna have thread. You know, you don't need it. small bottle of bio shower soap.
Nah.
One shaving razor. I don't use that when I'm in modern conveniences.
That's insane.
If you brought a razor to shave.
That's one of your 10?
Yeah, you're more concerned about being on television and less concerned about winning. That's weird. Nobody brings that. I've never seen a season where somebody brought a razor. Mm-hmm. One towel or one comb. Stupid list there.
Yeah, let's move on.
So, hunting. Here's where you get into some cool thoughts. So, here's what you're allowed to bring. This is like food procurement. You can bring one 300-yard roll, single filament fishing line, up to a max of 20-pound test, plus 35 assorted barbless hooks. No hook size bigger than 7-aught, and no lures. So, that's a pretty nice little deal, and lots of people bring the 300-yard spool and the hooks. That's all considered one item.
Yep.
So, one primitive bow or longbow, recurve or longbow. So, it can be a recurve.
Mm-hmm.
And 9 arrows.
Okay.
Pretty generous. One small gauge gill net. Lots of gill nets come.
That's a lot of people take the line, though, and they have fishing line.
One dude made a phenomenal gill net.
And make a gill net, which is that's something to think about. I mean, you have 300 yards?
Yeah.
300 yards of line?
One slingshot or catapult with 30 steel bearings, ball bearings, and one replacement band. I don't know that I've ever seen anybody bring a slingshot, but that's cool. One net foraging bag. I don't know why you would bring that. I mean, use a shirt.
Yeah, that's weird. Use a jacket. You have all that extra clothes.
2 pounds of 20 or 21-gauge snare wire. And 1 3-pound solid block of salt. So out of that list, I'm going with the bow for sure. And it's a real toss up for me between the 300 yards of fishing line or the gill net, because certain places they drop you would depend on which one's more useful. Everybody's got waterfront, right?
Yeah.
But not everybody's got a good place to put out a gill net. And not everybody's got a good place to throw a fishing line.
Yeah, but with your line, I think there's more variability in the line. In the you can make line? A gill net.
Yeah, but you can. But
and you could, I guess you could disassemble a gill net and make some fishing
exactly.
line.
Exactly.
So it's kind of, you know, it is what it is.
So anyways, and then here's
you're not getting list. You're not getting trapping equipment.
Snare wire.
Are you gonna take snare wire?
Yes. Oh yeah, that's definitely in my list. Snare wire and a bow.
You're taking fish from the hunting and fishing.
Snare wire, bow, and either a gill net or fishing line.
Three.
Yeah. Okay. You gotta eat. Man's gotta eat.
Okay.
I would bring nothing from this next category. Okay. Food. 2 items max. You can only bring 2 if you do bring any. 2 pounds of beef jerky. 2 pounds of dried just dried starch.
2 pounds.
Carbs. Yeah, 2 pounds. It's nothing. You can eat that in a day. 2 pounds of biltong. I don't necessarily know what biltong is. Some kind of protein meat. 2 pounds of hardtack, which is like a really dense biscuit. 2 pounds of chocolate. I could see me wanting that at some point.
Yeah.
2 pounds of pemmican, you know, it's trail mix, basically.
Mm-hmm.
2 pounds of gorp, also trail mix.
Mm-hmm.
2 pounds of flour.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's not, so you can make your own flour, but in the woods they're sticking them in, like, the things to make flour out of are few and far. Few and far.
2 pounds of flour actually go pretty far away.
That's a long, yeah, and talk about putting a lot of stuff on your stomach that'll stick with you.
Yeah.
I mean, you can make a lot.
Uh-huh.
So if I were to pick anything, which I wouldn't, but if I were.
We'll put it to the side.
2 pounds of flour. You run out too quick because the next category is where you're going to run out. But you're also allowed to bring 2/3 of a pound of rice or sugar or salt.
You have 3 left, by the way.
Yeah, I know. They're fixing to get took right here. The tools category.
Yep.
1 pocket knife. 1 hunting knife, fixed blade, no larger than 10 inches. 1 Leatherman.
Leatherman.
On my list.
Yeah, I'm taking it too.
On my list. 1 sharpening stone. 1 roll of duct tape or electrical tape.
Actually, hold up. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. You have 9.
Okay, yeah. My last
and
one,
that's including Leatherman.
Yeah, my last one's about to go. here pretty quick. And I may go back and nix one to get the other thing I want. One sharpening stone, one roll of duct tape, one small shovel, one small sewing kit. Keep in mind, you get a first aid kit.
Yeah.
So, one carabiner, weird. One LED flashlight. I think majority.
No, because they have the cameras have lights on them.
Yeah, and I think they have to give you a headlamp or something because there's no way they're filming in the dark. And everybody has a headlamp.
I think the cameras have lights
on them. So, this must
be
like an extra thing. Yeah. So, I don't think that's something you even need to consider.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
One pair of ice spikes. One Scotch-eyed auger. So we've talked about the Scotch-eyed auger. The guy that invented that was on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Took it with him, but he was the guy who lost his ferro rod after making the hot tub
out of the boat
that he found.
Yeah,
I was really rooting for him, and that really. Hold on, let me pause this. I need to take this call. It won't take me a second. All right, I didn't mean to pause with that phone call there, but that was our good buddy who's been on the podcast. Daniel Boone, historian.
I had somebody tell me, they're like, that Boone podcast y'all did was really
I've
good.
Had we should have him back on.
We need to have
he and
him
I are going
on.
To lunch today. We'll talk about
okay,
it.
Okay, cool.
Making him a turkey call. I made him a turkey call. Okay, one pair of ice spikes, the Scotch-eyed auger. So that guy, he tapped early, which was way disappointing because I really wanted him to win. The Scotch-eyed auger is an old, old concept. It's a drill bit that has a eye welded on the end of it, that one end of that eye is sharpened. And the eye is the same diameter across as the drill bit is. So that way you can drill holes and then you get a stick and you jam that eye over the other end to shave it down. And the hole you just drilled, it makes a peg and socket. It's one tool to make a peg and socket. So you can make furniture, you can make homes. You can build anything with it, technically. So anyways, that's what it is. It's a cool tool. One, I don't even know how to pronounce this. ADZE. It's a knife type situation, hatchet type situation. One two-handed draw knife, cool, but there's other things you can use. One hatchet, one saw with a blade no longer than 3 feet, and one axe. So what I really want, personally, what I would want is the saw and the axe.
Yeah.
But if I had, like, I'm at 9 right now. So I've got to figure out something to drop to get both.
So, you want me to tell you what you have?
Right now, I'm going with the axe.
Yeah, I would go axe, too.
Okay, so tell me what I have.
Okay.
And everything else that you can think of that you might want is prohibited.
Saw's handy. Saw's super handy. Okay, right now, you have a tarp, mummy bag, ferro rod, paracord, large pot, leatherman, axe, fishing line, snare, equipment, wire and stuff, bow.
Yeah, I not dropping anything. I'm not taking a saw. Just going axe.
I think I leave the snare equipment behind.
But
there's so
did I leave, did I have paracord and snare wire?
You did.
Okay, in that case, I would probably drop paracord.
Yeah,
and take saw. That's what I would do.
Yeah.
Drop paracord, take saw.
I think our list is very similar. I think it might be the exact same.
Well, I've watched the show enough to know which items.
But the snare equipment, the wire.
Well, you don't have to be for snares.
It doesn't have to be for snares. And also, a ton of food procurement comes. But I know what you're banking on. You're banking on big game.
Well, the winners, almost always bag some big food source.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it was funny in the first episode, the one guy who's got the septum ring, he made a funny comment when he forged that knife out of that nail. He said, maybe I can prison shank a muskox like Roland did, which I thought was funny because he did.
Yeah.
We've said it before.
What did you think of the use of that time to build that knife, that fixed blade knife?
Thought it was a decent idea. Decent enough. That guy's got plenty of fat to burn.
Yeah.
He's huge.
He is a big guy.
He's fine.
He's doing fine.
He's going to do fine.
I think he's doing fine.
I think he's going to go a long way.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it. I liked where his head was at. Mm-hmm. He's weird.
He's super weird, but he's got a good headspace.
Yeah, I do. I think so. It's funny. We've talked about this show a lot and never really went into this kind of detail on this television show because we're not critics of a television show.
Yeah.
But this is a conservation situation here, mm-hmm. and this is a life skill and part of our podcast monikers. We talk about bushcraft and backcountry and hunting and fishing and these things. This is one show that's legit real. Like, for the most part, it's not Survivor. It's not, I don't know, Naked and Afraid, where it's half fake. I mean, this show is pretty legit.
Oh, I agree.
And we said before last year, like, I watched the season along with when it was coming out, and you came in way later, so I couldn't talk about it with you.
Mm-hmm.
But Roland, most capable contestant they've ever had, could have lived there for the next 10 years and been fine, in my opinion. And I'll tell you why. The main reason, other than his experience as a hunting guide and just an outdoorsman, was he had nothing really to come back to. And he says that multiple times. I mean, he missed his mom, who had passed away. He missed his sister. But he didn't have family. He didn't have children.
And I think part of it is, like, they have to make it compelling. And if there's a runaway, you know, if there's a total runaway who's just outclassing everybody, you know, that's not super compelling television. So, of course, they're going to add, like, the stuff. So, I think how it works is you're required to film a – they, like, once a week will come out, do a health check, and they will –
is it once a week or every other week?
I think it's once a week.
Okay.
But they'll do a health check, and, like, that's important because they will, and they have, will pull you.
Yep.
If you lose, like, a 25% of your body weight or
they
whatever.
Have some numbers.
A metric, yeah. Or if you have some sort of severe, I'm not going to give any spoilers, but something happened to one contestant and she.
Go back. If you ever watch a season 7,
yeah,
is the one to watch.
But anyways, during that health check, they also take your spent batteries and they give you new batteries.
Yeah, you get batteries for your
camera equipment. And like part of the, what you have to do is you have to film X amount of time every day of, you know, and that's part of like you staying in the competition. So, yeah.
And that's part of even qualifying to do it. You got to be willing to talk about.
Yeah. Know, and I think so, like with that
personal
with that,
crap.
Yeah. With that guy, you know, of course they're going to use the footage of him talking about, you know, his mom and all that stuff, because without it, he's just like a machine.
He seems like a warrior.
He's a machine. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And it makes him human.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But if we could have him on the show, we will.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
I've actually emailed him. I've emailed him.
I'd like to email.
I don't know that he does email very much.
I'd like to email that gal.
Oh, yeah, she'd be great, too. She was phenomenal. Both of the gals on season mm-hmm. 7 were unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And Jordan Jonas, mm-hmm. if you want to hear from him, you should listen to Joe Rogan. He was on Joe Rogan's mm-hmm. podcast. Mm-hmm. Had a lot of cool things to talk about.
Yeah.
Not as cool as Roland, in my opinion. Cool, but...
Very.
I mean, all those... The people that last more than 20 days are all superhuman. They're just great.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy everything about watching them. I think that I could be very good friends with them in real life just because they have what it takes.
There's definitely an element of, like, with the winners, there's people that have made a long time that have, like, just total grit, but they have, like, demons or... a really just negative outlook. But it seems that the winners, the people that go all the way, just have like this positivity that's like palpable. And that's like, at the end of the day, yeah, all these, what you take is obviously super important in terms of like being prepared, but like the mental game
is big.
It's huge.
My concern for me, if I were ever selected, would be the weight loss. Because I'm for sure going to lose weight. I don't have that much to lose. And it would be a concern.
Would you just try to pack on pounds?
I would try to gain as much weight as possible beforehand, and then try to plan it. See, my diet now is wild game, basically, except for when I stop and eat fast food, and that's where I get my weight from. It's like the greasy,
mm-hmm.
crappy food that I eat and soda, you know. Like, take those out of my diet. I could potentially die now. And I don't know. My strategy would be to eat as much calories and be as fat as possible going into it.
In terms of, here's a question for you. And I think, like, you're a survivor. But
I would not take a personal photograph.
You're a pretty picky eater.
See, luckily, the things that are in the woods are things I eat.
when it comes to eating organ meat, when it comes to
it would
like you, if we're, you know, you're shooting a deer, you're like, my burger is steak burger. You're not taking like trimmings,
but
you're
also need to think like I'm in a headspace currently
where
I'm like, there's no reason for me to eat garbage.
Yeah.
I'm going to make everything into the best possible thing it can be.
Yeah, well, I'm the same way, sure.
I'm not going to eat sinew at home.
How about eyeballs and stuff?
In the field? In that situation?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to have no problem with
it. First thing, if I were to be lucky enough to harvest a big game, the heart would be the first thing to go.
Yeah.
Eat that that night.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Anything that's going to have a high caloric intake. But I tell you what I wouldn't do. Wouldn't eat muskox stomach. Uh-huh. Like, I know Roland did that. Nah. Wouldn't do that. That's a risk. You run a risk. I know too much about disease and wildlife disease to risk eating something sketchy. I've seen them eat rabbit intestine.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even come close to thinking about doing that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't eat any organs out of a rabbit, period. Mm-hmm. Nothing. Mm-hmm. Meat only.
Mm-hmm.
Same with fish. Like, that one guy that got sick one season, he ate a fish that had been in his gill net too long. And it was in below 30. And he ate a fish that had been in his gill net too long and started to decompose. He got super sick. That's what put him out of the game. I'd still be picky. Don't get me wrong. I wouldn't eat hooves. Just wouldn't do it.
Yeah, there's definitely moments where
when they pack animals out.
Yeah.
Have you noticed they always leave the hooves on? That always, like, I guess because they're planning on eating them or using them for something.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd trim that weight.
Yeah, there's always an element of, like, it's happened a couple times where somebody is, I mean, by the end of it, people are starving.
Everybody's starving. Everybody's lost 30 pounds.
Yeah.
Minimum.
And, you know, inevitably somebody's going to kill a rabbit or catch a rabbit with their snare equipment and split it open to find a spotty liver.
Yep.
And it's like that, it's that, what do I do here, you know, moment of like, this is telltale sign of tularemia, but what do I, you know.
Yeah, well, you've already touched it. And you're not wearing gloves, and your hands are going to have cuts all over them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because you're living outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that point, that's a decision you got to make for yourself. But my decision would be, we're going to boil this joker. We're going to boil it.
Mm-hmm.
And get it so hot that nothing could live through it, and we're going to eat it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the thing. Like, that bar of soap, nobody's using that for their item. But antibacterial soap would be something that could keep you in the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but is it worth more than a saw? No way.
Yeah.
I mean, firewood's more important than washing your hands.
What time are we at right now?
We're at 40 minutes. We've spent the whole show.
I'm not done.
okay. Well, we could just title this one alone.
Strategy. You get dropped off.
And it's so cool, the show.
You get dropped off. What is priority number one?
For me?
Yeah.
I'm just going to scout around. First thing I'm going to do, I'm going to find a place to store the gear that I don't have to be packing constantly. Like, I'm going to take whatever GoPro, whatever camera you're required to carry. You're required to carry a sat phone, which I've told Sam jokingly, first thing I do is throw that thing in the lake. But yeah. Then you'd be DQ'd and you couldn't do it. So, because I looked
at it. Which is a huge temptation.
But yeah. I would just chunk it in the lake. Then you're not tapping out. Yeah. No way to tap out. You're either just going to die or you're going to win.
Yeah.
But you got to carry that. And then I'd carry my hunting gear. And maybe something to stay overnight.
One thing that they didn't say on the, like, provided equipment, but I saw them having it, was air horn
and bear spray. They had bear spray and, you know, bear deterrent at this mm-hmm. place. Yeah, they did. Mm-hmm. They all had bear deterrent.
Mm-hmm.
So, I just scout it out and get a fire going. You know, first two things I do, scout it out, find a place to spend the night, fire going. The next day, I'm going hunting. I'm not going to – that's what I do. The next day will be me learning my area and hunting. Making it a trip, just mm-hmm. like I'd do if I was going on a trip.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a big pressure on getting your shelter built before winter comes in, but you need to pick a good spot first.
I think that's what
Roland did.
I think I spend like a day walking around with my bow, figuring mm-hmm. everything out.
Yeah,
but I think I'm like you. I'll try to pack on the pounds, get my weight up, and then you know. Slam a couple cheeseburgers right as I'm getting on the helicopter
where they
drop me in. And then I'm going to use those calories that I have in my system to build a shelter.
So you're getting dropped. and you're going to take a day and look around,
mm-hmm.
and then you're going to just jump right into building a shelter. You're going to make a decision on the spot.
I'd say day one, I get dropped off. First thing I'm going to do is I'm going to store my gear. I'm going to get a fire going, and I'm going to make a makeshift shelter, something to just get me through, you know, the night.
Yeah, well, I think you string up
the tarp in a good place, and have a fire going or whatever. And then pretty soon after that, the next day I'm walking, and I'm just taking a lap.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
then following that, as soon as I pick a spot, I'm going to use the calories that I have in my system right there while I'm still feeling great to lug all the gear. I mean, you only have an excess of calories one time in the show.
Yeah.
And if you've got all this heavy stuff, you might as well pick a spot pretty quick, use some of that excess energy to take your stuff, and then think about it. You're going to use – if you find a rock house, great.
Yeah, if you get like – yeah, Roland had a great
spot. But you're going to have to – you're going to have to saw down some trees. You're going to have to
get
logs.
Yeah, you're making logs no matter what. You're making logs and doing some construction.
And that's a total beating.
And you're thinking, like, building something from scratch, from literal scratch, is a mm-hmm. huge mental game. Mm-hmm. And you don't have a pen and a pad of paper to draw it out on.
Mm-hmm. And it's not like you're just stacking logs either. You have to notch them. I mean, they have to fit together.
You got to figure out what you're building that's going to be weatherproof.
Mm-hmm, you want it to be retain your heat.
Yep.
So
it's got to have a way to build a fire inside,
mm-hmm. Chimney.
All these things. Now, the guy. On, and this isn't a spoiler because it's just the first episode, but the guy that left, I was real impressed. I was like, his shelter?
Yep.
He's really coming along. Yep. He ain't been there but a day or two.
Mm-hmm. He said that all that work, I just don't think mentally he was there.
He was too worried about bears, man, and predators. He was real nervous. Talked about it a lot.
The other thing, though, in like grizzly country and stuff like that, I mean, to have, like, a really nice shelter that you feel secure in, like, sleep's important. Sleep's super important.
Well, on days when it's pouring rain or snow blowing like crazy, you're going to spend 15 hours in your shelter, minimum.
Yeah.
And it's like some of the other contestants have done in the past. They've, like, made their shelter homey mm-hmm. on the inside. They've peeled the logs so it's brighter, you know, showing the white wood on the inside instead of the bark, which is a great, phenomenal idea.
Less flammable.
It's just good. It keeps you in a better headspace. It's safer. Things like that. That's one thing
that's a huge part of the show. I mean, every season somebody's shelter burns down.
Yeah, every season. You remember the night the one guy burned his shelter down? They couldn't get him till the next morning, and he had to spend all night just out there laying by his burnt shelter.
Yeah, but just sitting by the burnt.
That was a guy who didn't, and oddly enough, he didn't bring a fire steel. That was a guy that did not bring a ferro rod that burned his shelter down.
And
that was why he burned his shelter down. He was banking a fire.
Yeah, and to be completely honest, that's a tap situation for him. You can't fault him for it, man.
See,
what I mean.
When he did it, I told Mikey, I looked at Mikey, and I said, he's got enough energy. He could have at least spent a couple more days and seen if he could have got something back together and made it.
Yeah.
But some people, once it's over, they're just like, yep, nope, this was the thing I needed the most, and it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I get it, tap situation. I get the guy that tapped early on in this season. I thought he made the right call. I thought he made the right call when he tapped.
Yeah.
Because he knew his body and what was going on and, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. It sucks. I'm not going to talk crap about him because, shoot, I might would get out there and tap on the first day or whatever.
That's fact.
You don't know until you're in it
mm-hmm.
what you would do. I like to think I know what I would do. That doesn't mean that's what would happen. Mm-hmm. It's such a good show. I can't recommend. If you're into anything we talk about on this podcast, I can't imagine you not liking that show. And History Channel's not sponsoring this podcast. Mm-hmm. So this is totally unbiased, something Sam and I watch. And we don't watch that much TV. I watch movies. I don't watch that much TV.
Mm-hmm.
Watched an unbelievable thriller last night. Unbelievable. Have you ever heard of Gypsy Rose? The girl Gypsy Rose, a real-life girl.
I know the name.
So I'm not getting into this whole thriller, but this was kind of based on that true life story a little bit. This one was called Run.
Mm-hmm.
It's about this quote-unquote mother that was drugging her daughter to make her handicapped. And the daughter totally trusted her. and then figured it out. I'm talking about paralyzing her. Yeah. Oh, thriller. It was kept me on the edge of my seat. So anyways, that's something I'd miss that. Things I'd miss, amenities I'd miss. Watching a good flick would be what I'd miss.
Get you some of that wire. Get you a little satellite dish and a television.
Solder me up a TV while I'm out there. Flat screen, 50 inches. Oh, I didn't see that on the list anywhere. It's just a good show. Well, anyways, let's talk about the gardens.
Wow. What a detour that took.
Talk about survivability here in the modern civilization.
What do you know about pruning tomato bushes?
Not much. Not much at all.
You need to YouTube up before your tomatoes get too big.
Too big?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm leaving it to Mike. It's not my garden. It's we've made that clear on here. I was told. Not my garden.
So. Yeah. So I've learned, like, my tomatoes. Oh, my plants. My God, they're as tall as I am.
Yours were huge when I saw them. They're as tall as you.
They're huge. They're
Do you have fruit?
Chin level.
Do you have fruit yet?
A little bit.
So we saw our first tomato yesterday, day before yesterday.
So I've got three like heirlooms, right? And then I've got four cherries. Yeah, and they're all about the same size. They're all big. The cherry tomato plants have a lot of tomatoes on them. The heirlooms, not as much. There's, you know, one or two on each. But
yours are going to be definitely earlier than ours. We started from seed.
But, I learned just recently. I was like, oh, man, our tomatoes. We're going to have so many tomatoes. And somebody told me, they're like, yeah, you've been pruning? And I was like, no. And they're like, what? And there's something, I learned this yesterday.
You're talking about cutting off the flowering buds?
I think when it, like, your branches are going to split, and it's going to split in three parts. And as it's splitting, you need to prune off some so that it's not, like, over...
Putting out too much energy.
Yeah, putting out too much energy into growth and not enough into the fruit itself.
Yeah, I guess I did know that.
And so I've got this, like, absolutely majestic... heirloom tomato plant with only a few tomatoes on it, and it's not flowering that much, and so I've made a mistake there.
Well,
I've got peppers.
I've
actually got peppers, but just YouTube that. I'll come back with more information next episode.
Let
about
me tell
pruning
you,
techniques.
So the differences in our gardens is the amount of sunlight you're getting,
tons,
and just the amount of open space you have around your garden,
tons,
compared to mine, which is essentially in the woods. The heat, so at my home, the temperature is generally, which I like from a living standpoint, is generally 5 to 10 degrees colder than anywhere else. Like, because I'm on a creek bottom in the woods, it's just cooler. But I've learned it's not the place to grow peppers. We will have peppers. They're coming along. They're going to be way late. We probably won't get peppers until September.
I've already got peppers growing.
Yeah, we won't probably get any till September. We'll get them. But next year, rows devoted to peppers, not going to be, even if we had a greenhouse, I wouldn't do it.
I've got, probably today, I can go and harvest a full-size cucumber.
Nice.
And two or three squash that are ready to pick. That's another thing that I actually am going to do, which is pruning and trimming back your squash and zucchini plants.
Oh, yeah. You don't want a bunch of ropey vines and no fruit coming out.
They say you can remove up to, I mean, you know how big they get. When it gets too still in there, there's not airflow. It gets too shaded.
Well, they have huge leaves.
Yeah. It's like, you know, there's not enough sunlight. There's too much energy going out, and it's like stagnant underneath the plants themselves. So I was watching YouTube videos where the guy was saying, like, it said my past experience of growing squash and cucumbers and zucchinis was, if you've ever done this in the past and you've had great fruit for the first few months and then nothing, like, that's because you're not pruning. So what you need to do is you can remove up to 40% of the leaves in the lower places where they're pushing into the space of your neighboring plants, where they're killing the airflow You need to trim those back. He's like, by doing these small steps, you can get fruit throughout the entire, until the first frost.
Yeah.
So, just something to note there.
Yeah, I did that. I stumbled onto that accidentally last year. I was growing those gourds, those mm-hmm. weird gourds that yeah. volunteered, hit it with the lawnmower. And every time I would hit it with the lawnmower, that spot would, bam, shoot out some fruit. So I started doing it every other mowing, clipping off the ends of those vines with a lawnmower, and learned that that is certainly the way to go. And we've got pumpkins coming up now. Our squash and zooks are really pushing out leaves. Like we're getting to the point where flowers are coming any day.
Mm-hmm.
We're just behind, just from where we started. We were behind. Yeah.
I've got an unbelievable amount of sunlight from the time the sun rises till it sets.
Yeah, you're virtually in a clear cut. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're in a good mm-hmm. place for growing mm-hmm. and virgin soil basically.
Mm-hmm.
My corn, on the other hand, looks as the only corn I've saw better than mine, sweet corn that's in a garden, is on Stokes Ferry coming towards Salisbury. There is a garden there that's beating me. Now they've got 4 foot tall corn,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know what they did to get their corn that tall that early, because I planted early on mm-hmm. corn, and I will claim the corn. That's not my, that's mine. That's something I've taken responsibility for. Mikey, everything else is pretty much Mikey's mm-hmm. deal, and she's doing a great job. But the corn, I'm stoked. I actually had, so when you plant this kind of corn by hand, sometimes you'll drop a couple of kernels into one hole just, you know, to get up your chances. Well, all my kernels germinated, and so I had multiple stalks coming out of one hole. So I was going in and digging those up and transplanting them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm pretty sure all my row is full. All my rows are full from doing that. I do have one twisty stalk that's probably not going to make it, but I need to get some nitrogen on it, and I think we'll pull through. But
well, we talked about a trade.
Yeah. Oh, I'm definitely going to hook you up with corn for peppers.
Yeah, we'll see how my peppers do. I just seen the first fruit on my pepper plants yesterday. So
peppers are a garden plant that's just one thing that I love. I think if I had to pick one thing that I'm super disappointed about, it's not having a place to grow peppers. And nowhere on my property do I have a place to grow them. Mikey's doing, talking about techniques on tomatoes, she's stringing tomatoes. She's doing T-posts and stringing them, like kind of trellising the tomatoes with tobacco twine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's working. I actually was totally against it, but I didn't voice my opinion because it's not my garden. It's our garden.
Yeah, if you hadn't, she hadn't done it,
I was
SOL.
Well, I was still on the thing of let's just make some cages. But it was
so
a lot
I
of
had,
cages.
Yeah, I had cages.
But I like her method better.
Yeah, for my heirlooms, and then pretty soon realized, like, this is not going to cut it, and ended up taking posts and driving them around, and then weaving heavy gauge wire around the entire thing.
So you're basically trellising.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mikey's doing it. You should see what she's got going. It's picture worthy. Mm-hmm. It looks very good.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, gardens are popping. Won't be long, and I think we'll all be eating out of the garden. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy about that. It's just one of those things about conservation, you know, in your backyard. You know, you're doing a lot for conservation by having a garden. You're saving yourself trips to the store, saving yourself some money, but you're also, you know, learning a little bit about cultivation.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, if you're treating your garden the right way, you're doing a little something for wildlife, especially if you planted a little extra just for the wildlife. You're not like anti-wildlife in the garden, which we did fence our garden, but there's still plenty of wildlife opportunity there.
Have you had crimson clover in your yard?
Oh yeah, my whole yard.
Is it still
flowering? All my crimson's done. My white is popping off still.
Yeah, my crimson's done.
It's crimson should be done by now everywhere.
It wasn't long. I mean, it wasn't long ago. It was a week or so ago that it finally kicked.
Well, this drought really, crimson's not super drought tolerant, you know, clover anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So. But yeah, it was a good thing to have, and I definitely think that's what helped my corn get going, that nitrogen fix. But Yeah, the gardens are looking good. I'm super happy. My wildlife planting, I got that linear opening on that power line that I planted in sunflowers and buckwheat. My buckwheat's in full bloom right now. It's gorgeous. It's about 3.5 feet tall. Unbelievable. And the pictures, I've got a trail cam on it, getting some sick pictures. Sick turkey pics.
What else you got?
Deer, raccoons, a couple coyotes. Rabbits are in there like crazy. Turkey, I got a turkey hen with 15 poults.
Whoa.
On camera.
That's great. And considering statewide trends.
Yeah, this year with you know, nobody seeing poults. I've got, she had just hatched them. And obviously hatched them on the property. Mm-hmm. And I knew where there were two nests on the property. And she just, I guess, decided to stroll them by the camera right after they popped out. I'm talking about. These jokers had been born maybe 2 hours.
Oh, that's wild.
And so I got pictures of them. I've got another hen with 8 and another hen that had 5 poults, but she's down to 4. I see her about every other day, and she's down to 4. So at least one of them got, I think, maybe that. But they did make it. We had a real cold couple of days with some rain, and I was real worried about turkey nests and turkey poults then, but we've got poults, so I'm very optimistic about, you know, our place and next season having turks.
Yeah, what else have you seen regarding turkey poults statewide?
You know, other places I've been, not a lot. I haven't seen a lot.
I haven't either.
I've only seen poults in one other location this year, actually, that's land trust owned. So, you know, I don't know. The statewide trend was thinking that we had some pretty awful weather for turkey nests this year. So with 2 years in a row of that, it's not good for this next season. Mm-hmm. Coming up.
Yeah.
And then we also had statewide record harvest again. So 2 years of that, and you're really looking at the, you know, our upland bird biologist, their thoughts are that males are subsequent to the population. You know, they only matter for breeding, and that's why we open the season later.
Yeah.
You know, peak breeding's already happened by the time hunting season opens. Yeah. So you can take those males out, and they don't really matter to the overall population. That's the theory. I tend to disagree with that statement. I think they do matter, because if you take out all the mature birds, so 2 years ago when we had a record harvest, took out, you know, 30,000 birds, 50,000, whatever it was a buttload. Took out all the mature birds, and then the next year we had a record harvest, including a record Jake harvest. So we took out all last year's birds that hatched on a bad year of hatching. So this coming year, I expect to see that number drop. I expect to see our harvest numbers statewide go down, because there's not going to be a lot of harvestable birds unless everybody else is just having a great hatch like I did. And those birds make it. And so I don't know. It's I care about turkeys a lot, because they're kind of an indicator. They're an indicator species of if we're doing things good or not, because they're real fragile. If we're doing things good, then we got a lot of turkeys. If we're doing things bad, turkeys go away. And I'm old enough that I remember the very first turkey season in North Carolina, and I also remember the very first turkey I saw ever. And I don't want to go back to those days. The past 4 or 5 years, we've been in the greatest time ever to be a wild turkey in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to go back to before that. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. We've probably seen it as a bell-shaped curve. We've seen it go up, 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 up. It's probably hit a peak. It's going to start tapering back down, and it'll eventually hopefully hit a spot where it levels off, and that's the population we're supposed to have. Mm-hmm. So anyways, that's my spiel on turkeys. Seen some other wildlife. Couple of slider turtles have made nests and laid eggs in my buckwheat patch. I found 2 turtle nests while they were laying, and you know, it's just a weird side note, but yeah, it's cool.
Yeah,
it's Boone was cool. Boone was way into it. Mm-hmm. So I've showed him what a turtle nest looks like and told him, you know, we don't mess with those eggs. We just let those go. But he's interested in it.
What else do we have on the docket? Is there anything else you want to talk about?
You know, I feel like we've tried to bring our A game today. I mean, I know we spent a ton of time talking about
television,
talking about TV. Stupid. I know. Stupid. But, yeah, I think we do need to give a shout-out to our sponsors. We did plug in Backcountry Beyond with a little sock plug there. Mm-hmm. But
and we plugged
Grayson with
– We plugged Grayson.
Lost Highway Gun Dog Kennels.
And we plugged the Traveler Training Co.
Big and all those plugs were dead serious plugs. I mean, everything we said about all those. Yeah. I did. We didn't get to plug Rock Outdoors. Mm-hmm. And they do carry a full line of camping gear. But a lot of it is not stuff that would be allowed on the lawn expedition if you were to do that. But as just a outdoors person that's going camping, they carry a ton of stuff that I take.
Yeah, if you want comfort.
And just if you want to just do it right.
Yeah, if you plan on being comfortable instead of surviving.
Yeah, there's thriving and then there's surviving. And there's somewhat a fine line in between where I like to be. And that's where you can stop at Rock and check out their camping gear. Like, they carry the full MSR line pretty much, mm-hmm. which is quality
stuff.
God, be
so handy on the show.
Yeah. There's a lot of MSR stuff. The water filter, for one. I mean, they're having to boil all their water.
It's awful.
Ugh. It's just a long process. But I thought maybe when they were at Great Slave Lake, maybe that water was just drinkable. I don't know.
See some away. Of them collect drinking out of their tarps.
Yeah, that was a good idea. That was a good idea. A little morning drink. That one guy's like, I'm going to have me a morning drink. Mm-hmm. He's like, I'm going to sift the grit through my teeth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then he said something like, I think I swallowed some bugs.
Yeah.
A little extra protein for breakfast or some crazy thing. So
it's funny. Before we even came on, we had like what we were going to talk about. And then
didn't
I
talk about any of that.
And then I asked about Alone. And I didn't know that you'd watched.
Oh,
until.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I bet I wasn't going to bring it up because I know you've typically been behind on
I usually
me.
Am. Not this year.
I love that show. I also like the show, although it's fake. It's super fake. I also like the show Mountain Men. I just like watching it. I don't know why. It's kind of a Duck Dynasty version of Mountain Man survival skills. Uh-huh. But there's a guy in North Carolina, and our intern last year actually worked for him or lived with him or something.
Who, Hannah?
No. Gosh. We're just the Hunsuckers.
Aaliyah.
Aaliyah, yeah. Uh-huh. Eustace Conway. He's on the show. He's in Boone. Well, Watauga County, I think.
You know, he...
He's got conservation easements on his place, Turtle Mountain.
He knows, I guess, his land. I'm not going to say any names, but I did a conservation easement on a property in Davie County.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that was Eustace's land.
Oh.
Or something like that.
See?
Or,
so yeah, he's all about conservation. So uh-huh. One of the reasons I like the show. But
it wasn't his now, but I mean, I think it was like old family land or something. He knew that guy.
That show also premiered.
Was linked to him or something.
That show also premiered this week.
Yeah, I saw right there at the end of that Mountain Man show, which led into Alone.
Yep.
And I saw some old guy making a snowshoe. I was like, I'm
yeah.
out.
Yeah, no, that's
like,
Tom Orr. Tom Orr's great.
I was like, I'm out on this.
Nope, Tom Orr's great. You'd
I was like,
it.
Who is this Saint Nick?
I love Tom Orr. Tom Orr's great, dude. He's great. Just old. Now, he is a legit old mountain man. Now, he lives in a nice cabin, mm-hmm. like modern conveniences, but
sure.
He's an old mountain man, an old mm-hmm. rodeo cowboy. I like him. Hopefully, I can be him one day. and there's another one who you'd really like, Mari Mariotto, who's not on this season, but he was an Alaskan trapper. I think he's a mechanic full-time, but during trapping season, he's a trapper, a bush pilot. Dude. You talk about a guy that can whip up a cabin in about a day and a nice cabin, like a cabin as nice as me and you live in a day from scratch.
One thing that we wanted to talk about, which we didn't, and we can give a quick plug or something, but you wanted to talk about North Carolina, things that are happening on the landscape or places or things to check out right now. That's a drink. And so I've got one. My parents actually hit me up, and it's right across the line in South Carolina. But I know Crystal Cockman, our director of conservation, has gone out and done this trip and really enjoyed it. And its peak right now is the spider lilies. It's on the Catawba River right across the state line. You can go to Lansford, Landsford Canal State Park. And it's like 20 acres of these aquatic lilies that basically are
nowhere.
Yeah, they're basically nowhere. And they go all the way across the river. They're beautiful. They're white. And my parents went and just did the walk. You know, you can walk to it if you don't.
Did they just know about it from being locals? Or
my mom's gotten into she's a part of like a gardening club and stuff, okay. And like took some classes, like a master gardener class and stuff. So she's big into it, and I think just kind of has gotten into that world and probably found out through that.
She ever watched Magnum PI talking about TV shows?
No, I'm sure she has.
There's a lot of episodes where they do some like garden competitions, like flower gardens.
Magnum PI?
Yeah, it's a old.
I thought it was a cop show.
It's an old detective show, but he lives at this estate, and the estate, he's like a bum. But he lives there. But the estate owner has this British butler who's into like the garden club and the upper class. Uh-huh. And they have a couple of garden episodes where they're coming to see some kind of super rare flower that blooms for like an hour,
uh-huh,
bloom and stuff. So that's the first thing I thought of, was the episodes of Magnum PI and the garden club. That's what.
Yeah.
But it's cool. I'm super interested in it.
Yeah, I am too. So that's one that's nearby. If you wanted to go check that out, I have not been, but I hear it's, from what they said, tons of people are on the river in kayaks kind of paddling through. You can also walk to it and go see it there, but well worth it. In terms of something right now, I think May and June are like peak. So, better hurry up if you want to go check that out. What you got?
Some more local intel straight from the hot off the press, which I don't even want to give it out, but I will. Talked last episode about fishing. Something to know if you're into catching big old panfish, the shell crackers are on the beds on the Yadkin chain right now. Any time you go during the day, you can find them. You need to look for banks that have different features than anywhere else. Like, just look for something different, either a big cut bank in the middle of a nice sloped bank, or rocky bank, the shallow, where they can bed, and then look for muddy water. So look for where the silt is stirred up. That's going to be a bluegill/shellcracker bed. There's going to be shellcrackers there. Mm-hmm. And me and Boone have been hammering them.
I like that.
Got a freezer full. The shop freezer is full of shell. We are straight stacked on shellcrackers. So there's plenty left for everybody to catch. And that is a really great way to introduce a kid into fishing, or just reintroduce yourself.
Not only that, but we had on last episode, which I thought was a really fun one, Brandon Rakes.
Mm-hmm.
Braden.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying that right now, he's fishing around those beds. Mm-hmm. He said it's still not too late to catch big bass. That's where he says the big bass are at. He doesn't stray but 7 or 8 feet, 9, 10 feet off.
Yep.
Off the bank. So if you run a big old swim bait or something by there, you might catch a trophy as well.
Yeah, that's hot intel right now. I would not give that out to my best of friends. So I guess I got a lot of friends.
Yep.
About the 10 that listen to the show.
Another hot off the press North Carolina intel is that delayed harvest trout streams, which are catch and release only. From like, I wish I knew the date exactly, like October till now.
All but about 4 months of the year.
Yeah. So these are rivers that are stocked by the Wildlife Resource Commission. They are, as of Saturday, this past Saturday, so that was June. Let me look. Day is today. As of June 5th, they are open for harvest. You can go in there and keep trout, and these are places that have not been pillaged yet.
Yeah.
So the getting's good. If you want to go out there and catch some for the freezer, take home or whatever, now's the time.
And you should do it.
Yeah. You can go out to, you know, the Wildlife Resource Commission website and look at a list of the streams that are.
Yeah, or just call Sam. He'll give you all the intel.
It's fine. I'll help you out.
But yeah.
What else?
Lots to do.
I got one more.
Yeah.
I was looking back through my photos, because I'm starting to see the blackberries.
Oh, yeah, you're talking big about that.
I am. Last year, I have a picture from June 13th of me with a big old basket full of blackberries, and I've been looking at the blackberries around my house and they've got fruit and they're all red and they're starting to turn. If you're into that, now's the time. Get ready. Get your baskets out. Take the family. Put on your bug spray, because last year I was covered up in chiggers.
Wear your long sleeves and long pants.
Yep, wear your long sleeves and long pants for the briars and for the bugs. But in terms of foraging opportunities, doesn't get much more fun than that.
There you have it. Yeah, it's about the easiest thing to forage on the planet.
Yeah, 100%.
So, and one of the best tasting.
Uh-huh.
So, I agree.
Pies. Oh, yeah. Cobblers. Oh,
yeah, I'm a cobbler guy. Yeah, we got strawberries this weekend, and Mikey whipped up I told her, I was like, the one requirement of me going with is that there's going to be a strawberry cobbler when we get back home.
What else? What other cobblers? If you had to choose,
I like all cobblers.
If you had to choose between blackberry cobbler, blueberry cobbler, peach cobbler, strawberry cobbler.
Oh, it's between peach and strawberry, but I'm probably leaning strawberry.
Yeah, peach is mighty good.
I like peach. I
like blackberry, too. I like the tart.
Yeah, I'm not turning down it. I prefer cobbler to cake or pie, hands down.
I agree.
Hands down. Cobbler to cake or pie of any kind. And it can be hobo cobbler or regular cobbler.
If you had your flour as one of those 10 items, you could make a cobbler.
Oh, yeah. You could definitely whip up a cobbler.
You'd use up a lot of flour, but...
Yeah, but it's...
What a treat that would be.
Yeah, there's a lot of things you could do. Remember when Ralph whipped up that cobbler when we were before the dove hunt that one night?
Uh-huh.
And he's like, how much butter do you think? And I said, well, I usually go with at least a stick. And he's like, well, let's do two. Yep. And it was good. That was a peach cobbler. I'm pretty sure it was peach.
I can't remember.
I think it was peach. Anyways. All right. Well, enough about surviving. And we will look forward to talking to you next week, I think. And maybe have a guest. So, you got anything else? Closers?
Go get some berries.
Closing.
If you like the content and you'd like it to keep coming, you should still know that this podcast is just one of the tools that we use here at Three Rivers Land Trust to further our conservation mission. Our number one priority and purpose has always been to conserve land and natural resources for future generations and to be a voice for wildlife to ensure that they have habitats forever here in North Carolina. The podcast is just a byproduct to further that mission. To be a part of the team in the fight for the conservation mission, you should visit our website at www.threeriverslandtrust.org.